A state lawmaker from Colstrip says he's hoping for a civil dialogue on Governor Bullock's ideas for reducing carbon dioxide emissions in Montana. The administration gives that plan its first public airing tonight in Colstrip. And that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Eric Whitney.
And I'm Christopher Allen. Also on the news tonight, state legislators don't think Xerox is delivering on their $70 million overhaul to the Medicaid payment system. We'll also hear from business people just back from the Montana Trade Delegation's trip to China.
First, a programming note. Montana Public Radio will broadcast the Lewis Zinke debate tonight at 7:30 p.m. The audio is available on our website right now at montana@mtpr.org. And again, we'll be on the air tonight at 7:30. The debate between the candidates for Montana's U.S. House seat, Republican Ryan Zinke, and Democrat John Lewis was recorded last evening in Billings. Listen tonight at 7:30 following All Things Considered. This American Life and Selected Shorts will air 1 hour later than usual tonight only. Members of a state legislative panel say they don't believe Xerox Corporation will be able to fulfill its $70 million contract to create a new computer program to manage Medicaid payments. The Legislative Finance Committee unanimously supported a no-confidence resolution last week, more than 2 months after state officials resolved a breach of contract issue with Xerox. The project is more than 2 years behind schedule. The Medicaid Management and Information System is supposed to replace a 30-year-old system that handles payments to thousands of Medicaid providers. The old system is unable to keep up with increasingly complex payment rules. Xerox spokeswoman Jennifer Wassmer said in a statement that Xerox is dedicated to continued work with the state to deliver a new reliable system.
Republican leaders from four counties want to be added to a lawsuit to force Montana to close GOP primary election voting to only registered party members. The plaintiffs allege the state law that allows registered voters to participate in any party primary they want is unconstitutional. Ravalli GOP attorney Matthew Monforton calls the open primary system a relic that allows non-party members to interfere with the Republican selection of nominees. On Tuesday, Monforton requested the addition of the GOP central committees in Gallatin, Sanders, Dawson, and Stillwater counties as plaintiffs. The Ravalli County Republican Central Committee filed its challenge of the state's open primary system on September 8th in district court. Montana Democrats have criticized the lawsuit as an attempt to shut voters out of the process.
Tonight, Governor Bullock's proposal for how Montana can reduce CO2 emissions from its coal-fired power plants gets its first public airing at a meeting in Colstrip. More public meetings will follow in Billings tomorrow night and in Missoula on Thursday. The administration is trying to meet a goal set by the Environmental Protection Agency for Montana to reduce CO2 emissions by 21% by the year 2030. Last week, we aired an interview with University of Montana climate scientist Steve Running about the proposal. That interview remains available on our website, mtpr.org. Tonight, we hear from Dwayne Ankeny, a Republican state legislator from Colstrip. He's a retired coal miner. Ankeny says tonight's meeting about the proposed options from the Bullock administration is important.
I think it's very important to all Montanans, the effects and what's going on here. And I think it's real important to get the facts out, whether you agree with the EPA, what they're doing, which I think is a travesty, the coal industry being regulated under two sections of the Clean Air Act that was brought about by a lawsuit and a settlement. But going forward, hey, the hammer's going to come down. June of 2016, the EPA in their press releases say the states have enormous options to meet these regulations. Well, their definition of enormous is a big office in Washington, D.C., looking out at their shiny black Mercedes SUVs. But nonetheless, it's pretty restrictive on the industry and on Montana as a whole. It looks like the DEQ will just rate these regulations, which I don't think is true. I think it's going to have a lot of involvement with the Public Service Commission. Certainly, the legislature should be involved, as along with the Consumer Council. It needs to be a big part of this discussion and whatever rules we come up with. And it's important to note that this is things that's being proposed. And I think we got to look at them and then determine our, you know, what we think will work. You know, win, lose, draw, however this comes out, the consumer's going to pay the cost, and it's going to be substantial.
I understand your point of view that this EPA goal for Montana to reduce CO2 emissions 21%, you don't agree with that goal. You know, that being said, the governor has laid out this paper that offers these options that says the state can meet that goal without having to reduce the amount of coal that's being burned in Montana. PPL has said that's at least worth talking about, and you know, the Montana Environmental Information Center says this looks like a plan that's worth talking about. What's your take on the actual paper being put forth by the governor and DEQ?
It's worth talking about. What I'm trying to do is not make this a political thing. I mean, it's worth talking about. And like I said, the hammer's coming down, so it behooves us to have a plan in place, so we better be talking about it and not standing there beating our chest and expounding a lot of political rhetoric. We need to talk about how we're going to keep these jobs in Montana, how we're going to keep producing power and meet whatever standards they come out with. Maybe it's a little bit of every option. Maybe it's one option, one scenario. I don't know. But I'm going to be there looking for a solution that works, because, I mean, you may not have been a math major, but you might want to take a look at what you just said, that while we do not reduce the amount of coal or the amount of electricity being generated, I mean, come on, you reduce consumption, which I think we all reduce our consumption. I mean, I probably got a TV I ain't watching in the basement running right now. Lights on I don't need. I mean, we can all do our part here. The efficient way that the plant burns the coal, it's probably got some tweaks they could do there. Although these, in defense of the plants, they've been working for the last 10 years. They've increased their efficiency quite a bit, but yet the EPA won't let you count that. So when they mandate we have to do more, how much more can we do? I think we can do, like, an energy efficiency. There's probably some room there. I think there, it's a little bit of everything but the carbon sequestration. I don't think we can do that.
Last week, when this white paper came out, I talked to a scientist here at UM, Steve Running. What he told me about this whole thing, big picture, is he said this looks like progress, because in the past, the conversation has always been about, is climate change real or not? And now with this document, or lately, it seems like people are talking about, well, what can we do to impact climate change? So we're changing from a conversation of, is climate change real or not, to, well, what can we do about it? Do you agree with him that dialogue has changed in Montana?
No, I hardly agree with anything he says. It's pretty easy to sit there with a book and figure this stuff out, but read some history, look around. This climate change, I mean, I don't agree with you. I'm not going to get into that.
In your eyes, the coal industry and the power industry in Montana, they don't need to be making any changes.
I think we do. Don't get me wrong. I think we got to reduce emissions. And this has been a discussion long before this ever come along, was with energy efficiency. Anytime we can more efficiently burn the fuel is a good thing. And there is much more efficient ways to burn fossil fuel, coal, but there isn't an investor in this part of the world that'll put a nickel into building a clean coal-fired plant, because they'll be in court for 40 years with the environmentalists. That's just a fact.
So when you say we all need to do our part to reduce energy use and be more efficient with energy use, that's not because you think we need to take action to do something about climate change. Why do you think we all need to be more efficient and use less electricity?
What we're talking about here is not pollution, it's emissions, and there's a difference.
So you're saying we need to reduce emissions, but why do we need to reduce emissions if that has nothing to do with global warming?
Because it's just a more healthy thing to do.
So let me ask you a question about the upcoming legislative session, and I'm just wondering if you can tell me what your goals are for the legislative session in terms of coal jobs and the coal and energy industry in Montana.
There's going to be a lot of discussion over how much of the governor's proposal will go through the legislature, whether it'll be just enacted through the DEQ, but I think any renewable portfolio expansion will go through the legislature. I think that'll be an issue of discussion and legislation.
Do you personally have plans to carry any specific coal-related bills in the legislature this year?
Just a coal board funding bill. That's all I got on my agenda right now.
Let me ask you one more about the meeting tonight. You know, I asked what the message is you're trying to get across. Do you have any questions that you want DEQ or the governor to answer at tonight's meeting?
Not necessarily. My goal is that it be a very civil, informative discussion. I want the DEQ and the governor's office to be able to put forth their plan, whether I agree with it or not. I think it's important because here in Colstrip, more than any of these other meetings across the state, these folks that's going to attend this meeting are worried about their jobs. They're worried about how they're going to take care of their kids. I mean, this is a whole different discussion here than it will be at other places across the state, either Billings or Missoula. So what I want is for the folks that come here to hear a good civil discussion, listen to the proposals being made. I'm sure there will be some discussions how this will work or how this may have some problems. But still, it's very important that we work towards a solution that meets the requirements and then see where the chips fall from there. I mean, they're not going to come away with answers, but I just hope they come away with knowing that there's people really trying to work on their behalf.
Dwayne Ankeny is a Republican who represents Colstrip in the Montana House. Tonight's meeting to discuss reducing carbon dioxide emissions in Montana in Colstrip starts at 6 p.m. Another meeting happens tomorrow in Billings, and there's one in Missoula on Thursday. That event is scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. at the Best Western Grant Creek Inn.
Governor Steve Bullock's 8-day trade mission to China has concluded, and participants say Montana still has a lot to learn about conducting business there. Montana exported over $100 million worth of goods to China last year, but state officials say we can do more. Montana Department of Commerce Director Meg O'Leary says it appears there is one firm business deal involving Big Sky Resort, a couple of deals with Butte's Headframe Spirits, and some potential sales involving United Grain Corporation.
We have to debrief, and we have the next couple of weeks where we're going to understand exactly where we can strike and put some things to bed. But we also know that this is not just a one-shot deal. We can't expect to go over there and book a whole lot of business just in one try. They don't know Montana. They know Yellowstone Park, but we're a really big unknown to them, and so we have a lot of work to do.
The president of the Billings-based CTA Architects and Engineers, Scott Wilson, was part of the trade mission. CTA has 14 offices in the United States and one in Canada. Wilson says the company sees potential in its offshore growth.
Found out, it's definitely a different world over there. There's a lot of good design firms over in China. Got the opportunity to meet with a few of them, but one of the things I found out is, you know, we do have some technical expertise in a couple of areas that they don't have, at least the firms I met with, and they're really interested in, you know, one in particular would be our refrigeration engineering design capabilities.
Wilson says he's grateful and honored to have been a part of the governor's trade mission.
For us, I did see some tangible business opportunities. Obviously, you know, he did a great job of opening the doors for us. Now the onus is on us to kind of close the deal on some of the groups that we met with. Definitely very worth the time and energy that we put into it.
Commerce Director Meg O'Leary says the United States Ambassador to China, former Montana Senator Max Baucus, was not only a key part of the trade mission, but an extremely gracious host.
He was there first thing at the airport when we walked off the plane in Beijing, and apparently that is unprecedented. Some of the State Department people said that they have never seen an ambassador meet a delegation. And then he came to several of the meetings.
A total of 17 people were a part of the trade mission. 10 of them were from the private business sector. They returned to Montana on Sunday.
And tonight's weather forecast, west of the Divide, mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers, lows in the 30s. On Wednesday, partly cloudy with a slight chance of rain showers, highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. In central Montana tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers, lows 35 to 45. You'll see some wind that could reach 45 miles an hour. On Wednesday, partly cloudy, isolated rain showers through the day, highs 50 to 60. And in southwestern Montana tonight, partly cloudy, isolated rain showers in the evening with scattered snow showers overnight, which will turn into rain after midnight, lows 30 to 40 degrees. On Wednesday, partly cloudy, scattered rain and snow showers through the day, highs 45 to 55. And now for the editorial comments of Amy Sillenberg.
While you're out enjoying the beautiful days of fall, keep your ears open for the sounds of our local birds. With most of our summer migrants gone, it's the familiar nuthatches, siskins, and chickadees whose calls ring through western Montana forests as the larches begin their slow fade to gold. These year-round residents, the ones we see in the hills and at our bird feeders throughout the winter, carry us through the dark months. We take their subtle calls and quick-moving flocks for granted, but they're a big part of what sustains this landscape. How would it feel if they disappeared? That's the question raised by a sobering new study of birds and global warming conducted by the Audubon Society. By combining over 40 years of bird data with the latest climate models, researchers have created maps of where each species is likely to find the climatic conditions it needs to survive 60 years from now. Call it a field guide to the future. Unfortunately, the bird book our grandchildren will take into the woods in the year 2080 could be a much slimmer volume. Of 588 North American species studied, more than half are likely to find themselves in dire straits if global warming continues its current trajectory. In Montana, over 200 species are threatened, and many could go extinct. Our raptors, ospreys, bald and golden eagles, many ducks, loons, swans, rufous hummingbirds, long-billed curlews, and even backyard birds like mountain chickadees. It's a surprisingly long list. Could the nuthatches and chickadees really be gone from Montana when my daughter is my age? And what about trumpeter swans, which I was lucky enough to see this weekend in the Mission Valley? Threatened with extinction only a few decades ago, these swans have made a remarkable comeback thanks to the dedication of myriad organizations, agencies, and volunteers. Reintroductions of trumpeter swans have occurred in the Mission, Blackfoot, and Madison Valleys over the last 15 years, with hundreds of swans now summering and some even wintering in our state. For example, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, together with many partners, have brought swans back to the Mission Valley after a near 100-year absence. In 2004, trumpeters were observed nesting on the reservation for the first time in over 100 years, with now over 60 successful nests found. But if we stay on the path to the worst-case scenario by continuing our high levels of dirty fossil fuel emissions, all these conservation efforts could be for naught. Audubon's climate model projects a 100% loss of the swan's current range in Montana by 2080, and their winter range shifting north into Canada. We can rip that page from our current bird field guide, along with many others, if we continue business as usual. Fortunately, there is hope. At the state level, both the EPA and Governor Bullock's administration are working on solutions for Montana. This past June, the EPA issued its proposed Clean Power Plan, a draft rule to reduce carbon pollution from the nation's dirtiest power plants. And Governor Bullock asked the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, or DEQ, to analyze ways our state could comply. DEQ recently released Options for Montana's Energy Future, a white paper which outlines ways to meet these lower emission levels. This is the beginning of the state's plan to reduce Montana's carbon pollution by 21% by 2030, a good place to start. Options to reduce pollution in Montana will be discussed at two public meetings this week, one in Billings and the other in Missoula. The Missoula meeting is this Thursday, October 2nd, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Best Western Grant Creek Inn. Come out to learn about the plan and support a sustainable future for ourselves and our wildlife. There will be opportunity for public comment at this meeting. Our 2015 legislative session will be another opportunity to improve our renewable energy options and lessen our reliance on dirty fossil fuels. As we've heard on recent MTPR commentaries from ARRO and the Montana Renewable Energy Association, new legislation will likely be introduced in Helena to enact policies that bring us more renewable energy and greater efficiencies. And the best way for our state to enact new and creative energy policies is to elect leaders who share our values and are willing to act on climate. In these weeks before the November election, ask candidates for office if they are willing to listen to the vast majority of science and if they are ready to bring climate solutions forward. And vote with Montana's birds and wildlife in mind. And of course, we can act within our own homes and businesses to shrink our carbon footprints. We can create and maintain bird-friendly habitat in our backyards and open spaces. We can join the kind of citizen science projects that informed this particular research and promised to help us understand the unfolding future. Let's not use our common backyard birds the way canaries were once used to show danger in the mines. If we act now, our birds and wildlife will be healthier. So too our farms, rivers, economies, and even our own hearts. The Field Guide to the Birds in the Future can still be a hopeful book. This is Amy Sillenberg at Montana Audubon. To learn more about Audubon's new Birds and Climate Report and view interactive maps to the Field Guide to the Future, visit our website at mtaudubon.org. Thanks for listening.
Amy Sillenberg is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. Views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our website at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen.
And I'm Eric Whitney. Thanks for listening. And please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow for Montana Morning News at 7, 8, and 8:30 a.m.